Mini episode 1008 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 1008. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here today with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, my good friend Ben Chu. There is nobody better to talk basketball with. We have done this many times with him over the years. We are looking today at the 2018 NBA offseason and draft. We're going to take a look back and see what it bodes for the 2018-19 NBA season. We'll get into all that and much, much more. Ben, always a pleasure, my brother. How you doing today?
I'm doing good, Rick. How about yourself?
I am doing fine, thanks. I am remarkably fired up to talk NBA, all things considered, not least of which because we'll get to this in a little bit. At least if I squint hard enough, my Cleveland Cavaliers, I can say, have a bright future. The present, not so much, and that's the note that we'll start on because I think that's the note most people would expect us to start on. Coming right out of the NBA Finals and pretty much, I think, predestined as we look back on it in the end. After Game 1, the way it fell apart with J.R. Smith, LeBron goes out to join Team J.R. Smith, as it were. When you look at the makeup of the new Lakers, and I keep hearing, oh, but they're all playmakers. Really? How does JaVale McGee fit into this whole progression, this jigsaw puzzle they're putting together there? So there's a lot of people in major media that are giving their I told you so's right now on him going to LA, as that had been talked about all along. What none of them will ever admit, Ben, is that this is not the scenario anybody saw. Nobody saw it. He was thought to be going there if they were putting together another super team around him. Him going there with the motley crew that is around him, nobody saw that coming, and yet here we are. Obviously, LeBron wanted to be in L.A., wanted to be playing for the Laker brand, as he has said, joining Magic and Kobe and the legends before him, Jerry West, Kareem, etc. So, again, it happened, just not in the way that anybody, if they're being intellectually honest, expected it to happen.
Right, and I think also what ended up happening, too, was that we saw Paul George decide to stay in OKC. We saw San Antonio wanting to move Kawhi out of the conference. And certain things, certainly, I think also too, in terms of what we all thought was going to happen, again, I mean, if we look at this through like a prism, Rick, it kind of does make sense for what LeBron likes to do whenever he goes to teams. The last instance of when he went from Cleveland to Miami, he had his own sort of pre-built team, but knowing LeBron very well is that he likes challenges. So I think he would like taking on the ability, because I think we all know we're longtime NBA fans. The Lakers are the Lakers. I don't think that ever really changes. But for the short term, Lakers haven't made the playoffs since Kobe Bryant retired. So right. It's a completely different overall narrative that we have to look at. But I'm not really shocked, because I think LeBron realizes narrative of, if I go to LA, someone will join me, no matter what.
True, and as we've talked about it, now where you had tried to console me as a Cavs fan was in looking at the short term, and if LeBron stayed, and would it make it any different with Golden State? That's the whole interesting kind of a thing here, too, is it's really weird to see LeBron acknowledge so openly that toppling Golden State is not a one-year project. I mean, everybody knows that, but up until this moment in time, he's never admitted that. And that's where, to me, the whole hubbub about Boogie Cousins going to Golden State and what that ended up causing, to me, is ridiculous. I mean, it's a yawner. Okay, so Golden State probably goes through the playoffs next year. They probably get their precious 16-0 that they've been denied the last 2 years. But what big of a difference is that from where we are, where Golden State is standing head and shoulders above the rest of the league? They stack the deck a little bit more, and people are flashing back to when Kevin Durant went there. That's the move that stacked the deck, Ben. This is just gravy for them.
Right, and I think right now, especially with the acquisition of Cousins, it's one of those scenarios where things just kind of work out for Golden State. You know, if, let's say, Cousins doesn't get injured, there are definitely going to be, there were plenty of suitors out there, and I'm not 100% sure if there still weren't suitors that were available. There was rumors he was going to Portland and rumors that he might stay in New Orleans, but it's very tough to blame a player who didn't get a lot of interest in the offseason due to his injury to not be like, well, if there's a scenario that can get me to the best team, and arguably, if we can talk honestly, if that team ends up becoming one of the upper echelon of incredible teams, it's going to be the right decision for DeMarcus Cousins, no matter how you play it, because Golden State right now has the depth and the talent to allow him to get back to full strength.
Very much so. And, yeah, the way that it stacks up, that's a move that, like I said, there was a lot of media hype around it, but as far as the actual changing the X's and O's of the NBA, I don't think it really does nearly as much as the hype would have you indicate. But some of the other moves that you were talking about there, that for as much as there was supposed to be consolidation in major markets this offseason, you've alluded to this a little bit, PG-13 back to OKC, nobody really saw that coming, at least most of the way. You've got Kawhi Leonard being traded against his wishes to Toronto. DeRozan ends up in San Antonio and sort of being the martyr in the whole situation there. Nobody really thought he was going to be on the move, but that ended up being the case. So for the teams that were on the verge, again, Boston really didn't have a whole lot in the way of cap room. You couldn't have expected them to be that anxious and being out there pursuing anybody, but nobody going to Philadelphia of any note. That was a real kind of interesting thing here. They've made some moves, but as far as a big move to put somebody in there, a.k.a. LeBron or Paul George or somebody of that ilk around their developing big two there, that ended up not happening. Of course, we go back to the whole Colangelo issue. The big thing for me in Philadelphia is I am shocked that unless he wants to just stay working for NBA TV and has kind of a cush existence, I don't know why they didn't just immediately give that job to David Griffin. I don't think it would have changed the calculus with LeBron at all, but at least they'd have a hell of a GM in place. Philly has seemed like they've been stuck ever since the whole Colangelo burner business came out.
Right, and I think also the issue that they currently have to deal with is that this is one of the big building blocks of a young team, is that you have to try and figure out what are you going to do in terms of how you build the roster and how you improve the guys around you. And I think this is one of those rare times, Rick, in the NBA where stuff sort of just panned out differently from how everyone thought it was going to pan out. And especially if you count Philly, they're a young, emerging team with some good veteran leadership. And I think the question we're going to have to ask at some point is that team good enough to get over the top right now? Or do they need to start planning to make a run at a guy very similar to, if we flash back to the 80s, how the old Philly 76ers got Moses Malone?
That's a very good question. And again, I think what's funny is we're going to allude to this a little bit later when we get into talking about the draft stuff, and certainly with my Cavs, as far as needing something to happen, some improvement from within that may or may not be terribly likely at the moment. But for Philly, doesn't an awful lot of this come down to whether or not they can rehabilitate in some form or fashion? And I don't mean physically rehabilitate, but psychologically, whatever the case may be, Markelle Fultz, for as dominant a prospect as he was coming into the NBA, that's a thing where I think, again, if you had him and Simmons on the court at the same time with both of their playmaking abilities, that's really something where, and again, Fultz, prior to when he went down with whatever has happened to him, was a pretty doggone good shooter as well, which is something that Ben Simmons still lacks. So is that the key part of all of this, maybe, is whether or not they can get him back to being who he used to be? Because you've got three elite players there if they can do that.
Right, and there was some discussion in the offseason. I'm not 100% sure who was the originator of the discussion, but he has been working on his shot. And
okay,
they said that he is getting back to where they saw he was in the initial beginning of the draft process. And again, it's an understandable narrative with Fultz, because Fultz was such a, not a highly touted prospect, but many people believe that he was going to have a huge impact. And then this sort of, I guess you could say, phantom injury had come to light. And some people had to ask the question, is this a mental makeup thing or is this an actual injury that is currently plaguing him at the current moment? But he has all the tools. People need to remember he still hasn't even reached the 23-year-old timeline yet. So he's still very young right now, and he can become that guy. And I think that's what kind of makes Brett Brown and the whole Philly organization, that's kind of their weird issue right now, which is, should we be acquiring more assets in the long term to give us a deeper long-term dynastic success, or is this our moment right now, and what we need to do is acquire another big piece that can help get us to be the top of the East? Because, again, as you know, the East is still a very big toss-up with LeBron going to Los Angeles.
It is. All of a sudden, no question about that. You've got Boston up towards the top, Toronto. Again, they've got a lot of depth just like Boston, but also some strong sort of top-heavy pieces as well, kind of like Boston. So you've got those two arguably ahead of Philly right now. You've got Milwaukee in the mix as well. You've got a couple other teams that are really very interesting. Indiana, I think, especially in the playoffs, proved that they were for real with what they did with the Cavs there. So the East is a very interesting thing here. There were a lot of people when LeBron went to the West who were very quick to hand the East to Boston. And gun to my head, I would probably say they're the favorite, but I don't think it's nearly the done deal everybody thinks, Ben.
No, and I don't think so either, and especially with the huge movement in the East. I mean, it's been a long... We have to consider LeBron James' longevity of just having him be the focal point of the Eastern Conference. It's been a long time since LeBron-led team did not make the finals from the Eastern Conference. And at this timeline, you can, if we go back in a time machine and let's say Kyrie and Gordon Hayward both didn't get injured, I think more people would be content with saying Boston is clearly the pure favorites. But the question we all have to ask now is that since those injuries had happened, despite making it to the Eastern Conference Finals, they did look very shaky at times. And then now you're going to have to put out there Gordon Hayward and Kyrie, and there's, again, as you've heard in the offseason, rumors surrounding, will Kyrie stay?
That's right.
In Boston, and there's just, and right now, with all the muddledness of the Eastern Conference, it's tough for me to think that whoever wins the East in the upcoming NBA season, that might not be the team that's guaranteed to have this long, lengthy run being a possibly dynastic team. It's very possible other teams like New York, Orlando, Chicago could even bounce up and all of a sudden be that sort of team. So again, it's very open right now in the East, and it's also weird that guys like with all the movement now, we haven't even talked about how Milwaukee is very quietly possibly one of those teams that can make that next jump at some point.
That's right, they might be able to do that. And you mentioned New York. We're already at the point where 2019 is going to be a fascinating summer. The Knicks, with the cap room that they could potentially have, and maybe a little bit more cap room. You don't necessarily look at guys like Hardaway and Cantor as guys that you can necessarily easily move with the salaries, but the way the cap keeps going up, they might be able to do that. You've got Durant, who's been linked to them, Kyrie, who's been linked to them. It won't be both, because Kyrie being Kyrie, he's got to be the alpha on a team, which, ironically, notice how these rumors have flared ever since it looked like Jason Tatum was going to become a transcendent player in Boston, and that the Celtics wouldn't necessarily be Kyrie team the way that everybody thought going in there. So very fascinating to look ahead to next summer to see some of the possibilities here. There weren't a lot of teams with enough cap room this summer, but there are going to be some pieces next summer. While Durant is not necessarily that likely on paper to make a move, he could, because once the Warriors three-peat, he's kind of proved his point there. He's got a chance to build his historical legacy by doing it somewhere else. Even Klay Thompson has been linked to other teams next summer. So there is a possibility, because again, the Golden State thing, I've been on record as saying, it's not going to go on as long as people think it is. People are giving them the next, you know, three titles in a row. The next one, clearly, but I'm not even willing to say two in a row at this point. So the summer of 2019 may have something to say about that, whether it's the beginning of the breakup of Golden State or just other players moving to other teams. This summer was a very fascinating one, but I don't think 2019 is going to suffer by comparison.
No, not at all. And I think the real question for Golden State, and I think the one sort of argument that's still out there for that team to extend their run, is the four-peat. It's been a long time in the league since there has been a team that has four-peated. And it feels almost to me like that would be probably the big challenge that Steve Kerr can present some of these guys to make them even more legendary at that point. But I think the real question is going to be, will Golden State suffer from championship fatigue? We didn't get to really see that with the Jordan Bulls because he Lakers in the 80s and a little bit with the Celtics going into the early 90s. And I think that's the major concern you have to say for them. And again, it wouldn't shock me if this big five lineup they currently have, a couple of those pieces spin off and go somewhere else, or Golden State gets ahead of it and then makes a deal to trade them to another location. I mean, they've been linked to every sort of young, talented player, and I think there's a lot of unsure narrative because Golden State's, in terms of Golden State's longevity, because they've always planned to make moves ahead of schedule, or how their owner Joe Lacob used to say, light years ahead. And I think the question is going to be is, when you do get light years ahead, you cannot keep your current team the way it is.
That's
you
true.
You have to always keep updating, you always have to keep acquiring new talent. So it's going to be a very interesting 2019, because I think you can see a huge sea change to different teams and different locations just because of some things that are out of control, very similar to how 2018's free agency class was.
That's right. And by the way, and here's a real clip and save, but I would say, in looking at this here, everybody just seems to be assuming Boogie Cousins is a one-year deal. I'll tell you what, if Durant does start looking around for another place next year, if Durant does look to go do something else in 2019, I understand it's not as simple as taking one salary slot and applying it to another player because of, again, bird rights and all of that kind of stuff. But with financial machinations, I could very well see Boogie Cousins staying on there if Durant doesn't or Klay Thompson doesn't. If one of those salary spots, in other words, kind of comes open and they want to hang on to an awful lot of star power, and if Boogie Cousins comes back from the Achilles full-blown by the end of the year, and we'll see how that goes, because with a big man, it's always iffy. I'm not so sure to say this will be his last year there. It'll be his last year there as part of the Big Five, but if any of the other four parts are gone, Boogie could be there beyond this season, I think.
Right, and I also think, too, we haven't even spoken about Draymond Green, because there's always been rumors that they might trade him at some point because they might want to try and acquire a younger piece. Because as much as I think a lot of Golden State's core is the ability of Draymond Green, I think some might consider that if they were to get maybe discussions of Anthony Davis, they'd be willing to make a move to get Green out of there to another location.
Right. Yeah. So you have an awful lot of considerations like this, and a lot of moving pieces going on here. But another thing, of course, we wanted to get into with the offseason was the NBA draft and taking more of a long look here, futuristic look. It was a draft where you had some very gifted big men who were going to be expected to go towards the top here. DeAndre Ayton goes 1 to Phoenix. Bagley goes 2 to Sacramento, a little bit of a surprise because it was thought Luka Doncic might go there. That freed up the Atlanta-Dallas deal to where Doncic goes to Dallas, Trae Young to Atlanta. Mo Bamba, another one of these big men, going 6-2. Orlando. Trae Young had been linked to them in a lot of mock drafts, not least of which mine, if I remember correctly, but he was already gone by that point. Jaren Jackson Jr. Going 4 to Memphis. Wendell Carter going 7 to the Bulls, a little earlier than some thought that he might go. So starting with some of the big men here, again, in this brave new world of the NBA where even the centers are expected to be able to stretch the floor a little bit, and the power forwards, everybody's expected to be a stretch 4 or a stretch 5 if they're going to be truly elite with a capital E. Your thoughts on this and what we saw of any of these guys in summer ball?
I mean, especially in summer ball, I think if you were to go down the line of those eight guys, it's very apparent to me the most impressive overall was Jaren Jackson Jr. He played incredibly well at Utah Summer League. His Grizzlies made a deep run into the Summer League playoffs in Vegas. And I think the one major thing with him was that he was, again, in Tom Izzo's system. So sometimes we're not really sure how good of a player. We just spoke about Draymond Green. We all thought he was a good player, but he turned out to be much better than I think a lot of us thought. But we have it for Memphis. He's the perfect sort of guy to move with a new team, new era. 7 foot, can shoot the three. Is the son of Jaren Jackson Sr., who won a title in San Antonio. So that he impressed me a lot because I think he's one of those guys that is just prototypically made for the new NBA. To go quickly to Ayton and Bamba. Ayton is clearly in the mold of the Shaq-type big man who can stretch the floor a little bit with some perimeter abilities, but at times the question I have to ask with him is, will his defensive you know too, Rick, Dean and Bob are inversely both have different issues.
Right.
Dean is a great interior scorer and a great perimeter scorer, but is lacking in defense. Mo Bamba is a great defensive player, but has issues stretching the floor at times, and he'll definitely need to be more consistent on the NBA level for Orlando to make a huge jump. But I think Bamba overall is the most intriguing prospect, because, Rick, it's been a long time since we've seen a really big, pure defensive center who can score. And I'm trying to think, like, the last guy I can honestly think of that he reminds me of is Dikembe Mutombo, in terms of being able to, with his 7'4", 7'5", wingspan, block shots in the paint, but also take guys out with his ability to shoot. And I think we're going to start to see the trend of a lot more of those guys entering the league that can shoot from the perimeter.
Yeah, that's the way the league is going right now. And I'll tell you what, the one guy that I didn't mention out of this bunch, because he is the boom or bust guy of this draft, no question about it, based on what his health is going to be, Michael Porter going to Denver. And that is a situation where, as much as people are looking at Utah as far as being potentially the future of the Western Conference based on how they're going, you look at Denver, I don't like in the short term them signing IT this offseason. I don't see how he fits into what they're doing. But a lot of these other excellent young pieces, I don't know what the ceiling is on a lot of these guys, but certainly well above average, a lot of these fellas here. And then, obviously, at the center position, as strong as they are and locking it down right there, you look at that, where if Porter, if he can be somebody who comes in and is able to be healthy, and there's thought about them possibly redshirting him, but, I mean, the upside of him and Jokic together going forward with some of the other pieces in place, Denver could have as bright of a future as anybody in the league based on the health of Michael Porter.
Right, and I think very quickly to bring Trae Young into the conversation as well. I think both him and Michael Porter were the biggest boom-bust prospects in the draft, because you can see a guy like Trae Young turning into a Steph Curry. You can see Michael Porter Jr. turning into a Kevin Durantula-type player who can score from any spot on the floor. But what I think for such a Michael Porter Jr., what makes him such an intriguing prospect overall is that he was a big megastar coming out of the Seattle high school region. And I think most people had him penciled in, if he was healthy, to be a big top three draft pick, and then he ended up getting injured during his time at Missouri. We still don't have a lot of tape on Michael Porter Jr., which is very intriguing, because if you go off of what we have, there are definitely some bright spots and there's definitely some low points, but if you have a team that's very stacked like Denver's roster is, they can afford to take a risk, because this will either be a horrible pick that doesn't work out, and they might have just burnt a top 15 pick for nothing, or you could get a guy who could be a perennial all-star and could help you to the Western Conference Finals and maybe even the NBA Finals, just with his ability. It's very similar. I know we talk about Cleveland a lot on here, but it's very similar to Kyrie Irving's situation coming out. We had the tape, we saw the games, but when your sample size is, I like to believe, below 10 games, there's always that intrigue of we don't know how great this player is until we get to see him.
Well, yeah, and I remember that, and I remember in 2011, and on air and off air, I was a passionate advocate of the Cavs taking Kyrie Irving over Derek Williams, because my thought was very few people seem to dispute that he had a higher ceiling. And to me, when you're in that spot, it's all about ceiling. You swing from the heels, to use that baseball analogy. And if you're Denver and you're picking at 14, and with the talent on your roster, unless there are really weird circumstances, you're never going to be picking in the top five. You swing from the heels at 14 if Michael Porter's there. That's a guy that in normal circumstances would never fall to you in a draft. This is a guy who can be one of the very best players in the league if he is good here. A guy who's been compared to a young KD in a lot of ways here. So if you're Denver, yeah, I mean, because at 14, a lot of times, maybe not this year, because this year, like 2017, was another one of those, I think, historically great draft classes. But generally speaking, at 14, it's just like, oh, I hope we can get a rotation player here. You get a chance to get a megastar at 14, you do it, Ben.
Yeah, and I completely agree with what Denver has done. Let's remember, there was a very big timeline after the LLAI Nuggets where they were just in the dregs of the Western Conference.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, with their moves to also to acquire Paul Millsap, and you're getting with the extension of a guy like Jokic, and then the improved play of Jamal Murray and Gary Harris at the guards, they have a very interesting young team. It almost seems like a little bit of Philly West, almost. And I think, especially with Michael Malone at the helm there, it's going to be a very interesting couple seasons in Denver, because we always like to say, well, it's a foregone conclusion that Golden State, Houston, and the Lakers are going to be the top three teams in the West, but there's always, just within the annals of the NBA history, there's always that one team that sort of slips through for a period of time that no one really talks about, and Denver is definitely a prime candidate to be that.
Yeah, they look like they're going to be really good. Will Barton is a part of that as well. They were smart to lock him up as a free agent this past offseason. And yeah, in terms of just rooting for them in the West, a little bit of a personal tie here to the FDH Lounge, as another one of our great FDH Lounge dignitaries, Steve Callis, his high school basketball coach was Brendan Malone back in the day in New York City. So, I'm always happy to root for anybody in the Malone family, because I know they're near and dear to Steve Callis. But and looking at some of the other players here of note in the draft, I will say Kevin Knox with the Knicks there. He was sort of a polarizing prospect coming in, and one where you could squint and you could kind of look at him and you could see what Kentucky saw in him as a prospect a year ago, and the thought that he could be a tweener in the good sense of the word between 3 and 4 and be able to do an awful lot and give you an awful lot of offense at either position. But then you could look at what he did in Kentucky and say, that's a yawner. But in summer league, by and large, we saw the better version of Kevin Knox, and it's got people excited there that, you get Porzingis back in the mix. It's not like, Richardson and Nitolina and the other guys are not Richardson, Hardaway. It's not like these guys are necessarily world beaters around him, but if the better version of him shows up, it's easy to see how New York can creep back to being a playoff team.
Well, I think the one thing, too, that you have to also note about him was his, at Kentucky, he was playing for a very talented Kentucky team. Another guy we didn't mention, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander,
yep,
who is now with the Clippers, was also on that team. So, again, this is one of the issues I always have with trying to grade guys with on teams like Kentucky. It's also the same thing with Arizona and Michigan State, where they're great in the – where we don't know how good they are based on the Simpsons. I'm going to roll that back. In their own specific situation.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with Louisville, too. It's we don't know how good the guys are in – we know they're good in the system, but we don't know how good they can be. And I think the one thing you have to especially like about Knox's situation is his wingspan, ability to get to the basket. That's what impressed me the most in summer league. But again, also, he's a pretty good perimeter shooter already, as evidenced from a lot of the tape at Kentucky. And let's not forget, he's under 21, Rick. You got a lot of time to build up his frame and turn him into a great player and turn him into a guy who can be a great complementary player to Porzingis. Because I think that's one of the issues originally, is that Porzingis is a great player, but at this time, New York hasn't given him a true second option. I know he was playing with Carmelo at the time, but Carmelo was always number one.
Right.
So this might be the first time he's had an ability to play with a guy who will defer to him, but will also give him the ability to spread the floor a little bit more.
Yeah, it makes it very interesting going forward in New York. And again, it's been a long time coming for those fans to have anything to cheer about, but they were happy with what they were seeing in summer ball, which brings it around to, all right, point of personal privilege, my Cleveland Cavaliers. We'll talk about them a little bit here. Summer ball was exciting. It was a real punch in the nards here when LeBron left, and the thought of having to rebuild this time around here. But Colin Sexton, you and I were very, very hyped about him coming into the draft. Even in a great draft, I think it's going to go down as a steal getting him at number 8 with the kind of career I think that he's going to have if he stays healthy. Love the attitude. A lot of the things that have come out about Kyrie subsequently in the down years before LeBron got to Cleveland, that he may not have had the psychological makeup. Ironically, for as much as Kyrie wants to be the man, he seemed to sort of shirk, and a lot of these stories are only coming out now, at what it took to be that guy. Colin Sexton is insanely determined, confident, whatever. I think he's got the mindset to do that. And we talked about guys for whom there's not an awful lot of tape on. I'll tell you what, I've watched and again, people are going to snicker when I say this, the Oak Hill tape, but Billy Preston, a guy who I think there would have been an excellent case for him being a top 10 prospect coming into this draft, not least of which because he was a five-star recruit a year ago. Five-star recruits should very well, potentially at least, equate to being a top 10 draft pick a year later. We all know what happened there, NCAA sanctions, or, well, not the sanctions, but the threat of sanctions, I guess, with that suspicious car that he had. It was just a bad time to have a car like that with the whole FBI thing going on. So he goes over to play in Bosnia. He's hurt. It's a lost year. Somehow or another, he doesn't get drafted altogether. And I'd almost forgotten about him until the Cavs signed him into the two-way deal. And then I got hyped and I watched him in summer ball. And there will be an FDH Lounge delegation going down to watch a game in Canton this year as he's on that two-way contract. And we'll have some dignitaries in the stands cheering for our boy. But that's an interesting note here is that you've got him, but you've got Sexton who immediately, I know Kevin Love re-signed, and again, he's my favorite player, but as I said to you off air, I'm ambiguous about him re-signing because it's going to probably stop the Cavs from bottoming out in the short term to get another high pick. And since they're top 10 pick next year, if it's in the top 10, or if it's not in the top 10, that pick's going to go to Atlanta. They'll probably lose it to Atlanta unless something unexpected happens. But you do have Colin Sexton in there. You potentially have Billy Preston. If he can be rehabilitated to the level he was at a year ago, and boy, he showed some flashes in summer ball of still being that guy. The Cavs, at least, I think people would tend to agree if they're looking at it fairly, and with so many other pieces that are there, Rodney Hood, Clarkson, whatever, are certainly ahead on the timeline of where somebody like Philly was when they consciously started bottoming out.
Right, and I think just to take both of those players one by one, I was impressed with Preston as well at Summer League. I think he's very rangy still. His shot is still needs a lot of work, but anytime you can get a young athletic guy who could possibly make plays and be a part of rotation, you're going to want to get those guys. And even if he doesn't pan out to be a superstar or even a rotational guy, he at least has the promise of being a very good player. And I know it has to be hard for Cleveland fans to not be guaranteed the NBA Finals anymore, but at this point, you have to be consoled in the narrative that on the second go-around, you guys have a really good young team with at least one caliber star in terms of Kevin Love, and there's going to be hope for rebuilding, and there's hope to make the playoffs this year because the East is still the East. That hasn't really changed, but I think overall, the one thing I will say about Colin Sexton is just watching tape on him and watching how he plays, I have not seen a more competitive draft pick in at least the last 10 years. And he can do a lot on the floor. We already saw what he did at Alabama under head coach Avery Johnson. We saw him play 3-on-5 and almost win a game by himself. So I think that one thing that you do have to know with Sexton is that his competitive edge is just something I haven't seen in a while from guys. I mean, we all know I'm a Sonics fan by heart. He reminds me a lot of Gary Payton. He reminds me of the ability to get to the basket, make plays for other guys. So Sexton, a lot of people, it's very honestly, people are going to go for Luka. Obviously, Luka is probably going to be, if he has even a breadth of a great season, it's probably going to be the rookie of the year. But at this point, I would think just based on pure numbers alone, I think I would argue that Sexton has a very good chance to be the dark horse candidate for the Rookie of the Year award. I mean, also just because we didn't really get to touch on Doncic overall. I think he's going to be a great fit for Dallas. They've been looking for that star to replace Dirk for a while now. He's that guy, and think about those guys they have around him right now. Dennis Smith Jr. had a good rookie season, not really the Boffo, Russell Westbrook type rookie season that most people were expecting from him, but he's a really good player. You have guys like Josh Powell. You have guys like Harrison Barnes. You have a lot of talented guys around him, so I think Dallas is going to definitely be a huge threat in the West if Luka turns out to be a superstar in the league.
That's a great point. I want to talk about Dallas here. The one segue I'll make back to the Cavs is because, again, Dallas has the great prospect here. I'll still call him that 1 year into the league, Dennis Smith Jr., who I was just raving about after watching tape on him coming into the draft last year. I said this to your Colin Sexton, the one thing that separates the two, again, he's still got to do a little bit of work on his mid-range and on his outside shot. There's nothing to indicate that won't happen. And I think, again, I think Colin Sexton will be Rookie of the Year if he moves quicker quicker than I think and anybody else thinks he will make those strides in developing that. If he's ahead of schedule, I think he's the rookie of the year. Would you agree?
I would agree with that, too. Again, obviously, I think the two favorites are going to be Ayton and Doncic, but he can definitely be in there. And one thing that you have to also, just watching summer league, you have to be impressed by his pure game speed. Because we've all fair have discussed in terms of the transition of NFL mobile quarterbacks to the NFL. And sometimes they are not as good as we think they're going to be just because game speed is much different.
Right.
But one thing that definitely you could tell about Colin Sexton from the summer league was that his game speed at Alabama really was his game speed. It's going to be in the pros. There are going to be some issues with him because he's going to have to deal with a lot more bigger bodies in the paint that he was used to and then playing against teams in the SEC. But one thing you do have to use is that he's just the most competitive, fearless player I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
But we've learned anything through sports, Rick. Those are the guys that will usually be successful no matter what.
I agree with that. And in terms of looking at Dallas, let's segue around to that. They're a good team to go full circle on because I think this is something here. I have a theory about the future of the league and the way that, again, in terms of looking for that next wrinkle out there, I mean, Golden State redefined the game as we knew it in the middle part of this decade with the whole three-point revolution and everything that they've been doing. And that part of it's not going to go away. But as far as countering that, as far as trying to come up with their own wrinkle, for as much as I have ridiculed the whole notion that Houston did what they did intentionally, to me, Daryl Morey was able to get Chris Paul a year ago, and that's how that ended up together. He wants everybody to believe it was his vision to put Paul and Harden together. But I do think there is something to be said for the notion of having two very strong ball handlers out there. I think that was a part of the Cavs championship in 2016 and people kind of sleep on was the fact that LeBron and Kyrie on the floor had the ability to do that. Yes, the Cavs would get bogged down into ISO ball a lot. Maybe that's why people don't think of it that way. But I look at what Dallas has got there. That you've got Doncic out there, you've got Smith, both of whom have got excellent handles, can move the ball around here. You got Harrison Barnes. You got to see what the upside is, you know, with a couple of the younger guys that they have there as well. But again, to me, Dallas, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, could be about as strong as anybody in the league if that whole thing comes together. Because I love the notion of two ball handlers out there where you can't afford to just focus on the one because the other one will kill you.
Right, and I think we all know that's how Golden State has been so successful.
That too,
as
yes.
Well,
right.
And I think, and the one thing, like I mentioned earlier, Mark Cuban, the Dallas Mavericks owner, has really been trying to get that next superstar to Dallas. He tried it with a prime DeAndre Jordan. That didn't happen, even though DJ ultimately ended up going to Dallas anyway. But I think Luka, everyone likes his talent. He's young. He has that little bit of swagger. He can make plays, and I think that it's going to be one of those things where he's either going to be a Hall of Fame caliber guy, and I think he's fallen into the perfect situation in Dallas with a mentor like Dirk Nowitzki. And it feels to me that if Dallas making that transition to the young gun team that they're probably going to be long term, they can definitely build some guys to build that team however they want, and I think especially with any narrative, it would be big. I also feel like we do need to touch on Chicago, and we also have to touch
sure.
on Sacramento. But I figure
okay.
Do you want me to go for
well,
my thoughts on all that stuff? Or?
Go ahead, because to be honest with
sure.
you, I have a hard time kind of knowing what to make of those rosters. So I'll defer to you on this.
Sure. I'll lead with Chicago and then with Sacramento. With Chicago, I the one thing I do have to say, because we were talking about the big men during summer league, and I feel like we do need to mention Wendell Carter Jr. He had a pretty good summer league, averaging a double-double, was able to make some plays near the basket. There were a couple notable moments where he made some great blocks. Chicago is very sleepily a very interesting team moving forward. Without Markkanen play last year, you got Chris Dunn possibly coming into his own. LaVine re-signed there. So Chicago has a very interesting young team at the current moment. And I don't know if that's going to turn the playoffs anytime soon, but they're building a very good young nucleus core.
They are. I have a relative that works somewhere in the Bulls organization. Saw him at a family event this summer. First thing I said to him was, I love marketing, man. I think you guys got a building block.
Yeah, and I think Chicago, they're definitely, it feels like yet another rebuild for them. This does feel different. They're going to be really young and really fun very soon. And they've still got a lot of young talent on their roster that still hasn't been fully realized. Cristiano Felicio is on that squad. I know there's more talent on that Chicago roster than people see at this current point. It would not shock me if Wendell Carter Jr. turns in an all-star caliber-esque performance, that they could sneak into the playoffs, especially near the end of the regular season.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at the Eastern Conference and what a grab bag it is. I think you can definitely say that. You cannot say the same of Sacramento in the West, though, Ben Chu.
No, I don't think you can. And and it was very bizarre during their timeline, but let's be brutally honest, in Sacramento, we are. it's worth calling a spade at this point, Rick. They're a very interesting team. I'll make a very random analogy. I just finished watching a series called Life Sentence that essentially is based on I believe it was based off of a writer's idea. Essentially, this girl played by Lucy Hale who believes she's going to die of cancer, but then finds out she gets cured, and then talks about all the issues that arise from that. I bring that up mainly because that's what I feel like the Sacramento Kings are every year.
Yeah.
It kind of just feels like they make decisions because they kind of want to make decisions. Because personally for me, I think Marvin Bagley Jr. is going to be a great player for them. And he's going to be a guy who can definitely be a Zach Randolph type bringing in 2010. The question is I'm not really sure that's what they really need right now on that roster. I know De'Aaron Fox is a great player, but he is kind of a toss-up in my opinion in terms of how good his potential really is long-term. And the question is, to go back to my analogy, I think Sacramento went with the safe pick. And there's nothing wrong with going with the safe pick. But when you're, you know, let's be honest, I don't think Sacramento's the big free agency destination that people are writing about. When you want it, when you, like you used the analogy before in terms of baseball, you want to hit home runs, you got to go for the fence. And I at least think they should have considered a scenario where they might have taken Doncic and maybe worked out a deal with someone else, because I'm pretty sure Bagley would have dropped, or they could have taken Jaren Jackson, Trae Young, any of these other guys that were in the mix for them, because I think Bagley's a good player, but this ultimately just feels like Bagley talked his way into Sacramento because he wanted to be in Sacramento, it feels like to me.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, and I think you look at the way that they do things there. I've said this to you off air before, that the thing that is just perplexing, and I would say maddening if I cared, but I mean, I do care about the game of basketball, so I don't like to see any franchise be as stupid as they've been over the long term, unless I dislike that franchise, and I have no axe to grind there. But it's a thing where they are the epitome every year on draft day of living in the moment. What they did last year at this time, what they've done with their roster, it doesn't matter. It's who do we want right now? How they fit in with the roster, how they fit in going forward, how they fit in with moves we'd like to make going forward. That doesn't matter. Who do we like today? Who's the guy who, in a total vacuum, who do we want? I don't think any other 29 teams in the league operate that way. You can't operate in a vacuum. It has to be part of what your plan is there. Sacramento plans for one day a year, who they want on that day, and that's why the other 364 days don't matter for them.
I mean, I feel like we could do a 30-minute podcast just talking about Sacramento's decision
right.
over the last decade and a half.
Right.
And that's the thing. I think we both agree that we don't actually have any animosity towards Sacramento.
No.
I love those early 2008 teams, and I feel still that they were kind of unjustly taken out of the ability to win a championship. But it feels like at times that, like you said, they make decisions based off of maybe gut or in terms of intelligence. I'm gonna preface this with a narrative of Sacramento's history. The last winning season Sacramento had was in 2004.
Yeah.
During that timeline, the Browns had a playoff appearance. The Seattle Supersonics still existed, and Lucy Hale, the star of Life Sentence, was still an up-and-coming actress. So it's been nearly 14 years since they've even had a winning season, Rick.
Right.
I'm not talking playoff, winning season. And at some point, I know they're trying to embrace it because I think Vivek Ranadive is one of the better owners in the league just in terms of the game experience and everything. analogy of quicksand. When you try to move too much, you just get pulled deeper in. That's what it kind of feels like the Sacramento Kings are right now.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, somebody as learned as you, Ben Chu, you're right. Those Sacramento teams around the turn of the century are pretty great. Somebody like you, if you thought long and hard enough, I'll bet you could come up with some scenarios where they would have gone all the way and won the championship here. I feel safe in saying that, Ben. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could.
and I think also, too, ironically enough, that they've been one of the young, fun teams in the league, but let's be honest, when you go through seven head coaches, multiple GMs, it just kind of feels like a family business almost, which is great to have and great to be holden, but if the glory days are gone and they don't look like they're coming back, I don't know. Again, we may be entirely wrong on Marvin Bagley. I saw him at Summer League. I thought he did some great things, but he also did some kind of things.
Right.
But he definitely has the it's just tough for me to personally believe at this stage of their career, unless someone, either of them, get injured, that you couldn't make the argument that Doncic was the better pick at that point.
Right.
And the worst case was you say, well, he holds out, but we could trade him for more assets, even on draft day, because I guarantee you, if there was already discussions that Dallas wanted to acquire the Hawks pick, there's absolutely no way that they didn't give Sacramento a call at the same timeline.
Right. That's true. And for something that people will expect us to get to, but we're just going to do this here in passing toward the end because that's all it merits, one of the biggest names in the league over the last decade and a half, but not a huge name today in terms of impact to a team, Carmelo Anthony. Okay, so he's going to be going to the Rockets. And again, but in terms of what the Rockets have already lost this offseason, in terms of Golden State adding Bookie Cousins to the mix, in terms of LeBron being in the West now, safe to say Houston's already had their best look at it.
Yeah, I still think there is a scenario that could play out where they will stand toe-to-toe with Golden State because we don't know what injuries will happen, could occur to shake up the Western Conference playoff race. But they might have had their best opportunity to beat Golden State. But I will say, though, it could get interesting because if Carmelo possibly see a scenario where he is at the end of his career and he could be ringless. I could see a scenario where Melo finally decides to defer just a little bit.
Yeah.
To make better plays, to shoot better shots. And let's remember, too, Houston loves to shoot three-pointers, right? That has not changed in the last 3 years. And Carmelo, you have to give him credit, in recent years, he's one of the top 10 three-point attempt shooters in the league. So if he can find a way to make it work in their system, it's going to be great. The question, I think, for Houston will be losing Ariza, losing Luke Richard Abamute. They're going to need a guy along with P.J. Tucker to step up in defending the wing.
Right.
And I think at this point they don't have anyone. But again, it's going to be interesting how that team meshes together because I think if Carmelo is active and can make plays, let's not forget, we all say he's not the greatest defender in the league, but he has the talent. He can shut down a guy every once in a while. I think you just have to I know it's a footnote, and I think a lot of people are poo-pooing the narrative, but I think there is a scenario that if Carmelo decides to give this year as his year to possibly win a ring, we might see a different Melo. The question is, will we? And I'm not sure on that one.
Well, that's very interesting, and to me, from my entertainment-based point of view, I would say the real over-under for the Houston season is how long it takes Carmelo Anthony to go snitches get stitches on Harden the first time Harden starts hogging the ball from him. You know, I don't see that is necessarily going to work out well, being the third option behind him and Chris Paul, potentially.
Yeah, but I also think in the same, to use a argumentative point, you could see a scenario where Carmelo is the second option behind Chris Paul, because we also have to know that Chris Paul is a really great distributor. He doesn't necessarily need to put up those legendary point totals.
Right. Yeah, that's true. It's going to be interesting to see it play out. And again, a lot of interesting subtexts for the upcoming NBA season here. And again, while it looks to be, again, if everybody stays healthy in Golden State, I would say a foregone conclusion. And I'll go so far as to say they go 16-0 in the postseason, the way that the deck is stacked. But as far as undercurrents, as far as what's to come in the years after that, as far as this season sort of, and the one after it sort of being a precursor to the 2020s, I think you would say, a lot of interesting things here to look for. I think for, more so for the medium term and long term of the league than for the short term.
Right, and I also think, you know, Golden State is a favorite. There's no doubt they're not the favorite at this point. But we also have to consider some craziness can still happen in the Western Conference, and there are still a lot of good, talented teams. And we don't know. It's very possible, very similar to earlier this during the last season where they lost home court to Houston. You know, you never know what could happen. Yeah, Golden State could have some injuries that could keep them a little bit pushed back. There's a scenario where they might not get the top two seed, where they might have to go on the road to face a team that might be a young, talented team like Denver or a young, talented team like...
Certainly Utah. Definitely Utah.
Yeah, Utah. Definitely those guys. And I think also to touch on Utah really quick, Donovan Mitchell looks like he is going to play, you know, a huge role. I mean, this might be completely bizarre to say, Rick, but there is at least, I would say, a better than 50% chance that Donovan Mitchell could be the MVP in the next season. I could definitely see that scenario playing out.
You've said off air to me that, and I'm not going to overstate this here, but that you see at least traces of MJ in his game, which is very interesting.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just with his ability to get to the basket and the hang.
Right.
Because hang time is one of the big underrated narratives. If you can stand up there just a little bit longer and make a shot, it's going to definitely help. And you could definitely tell during the OKC series, that was one of the bigger reasons that they were able to upset OKC despite being the lower seed. But to be honest, at that point, I don't really encompass a one-game difference in seeding as being a big deal.
Right.
So, but Utah's a very interesting team moving forward, and it's the same thing with Denver as well. I could see a scenario where just all the stars align and Golden State does fall at some point. But again, you know, the league is what it is at this point. And it's very hard to bet against Golden State, especially with them acquiring Cousins in the offseason. But again, I mean, the argument you can even make there is that maybe Cousins fractures the locker room. There is some sort of petulant narrative that's followed him his entire career. I don't put much stock into that because he was spending time on Sacramento teams that didn't really improve that much around him, or in New Orleans when he was playing with Anthony Davis and then he sort of disappeared after his injury. And again, I don't know. There's still a lot to happen in the upcoming season. It's definitely, I think there's a lot more storylines than last year, I would argue.
Well, I mean, in terms of him fracturing the locker room, I think Golden State has already proved, as much as I hate to put them over in any way because I still loathe them, but I have to be honest here. In terms of their chemistry being fracture-proof, bro, they had Swaggy P on their team last year, you know? I mean,
yeah, but it's Swaggy P, though. I mean, the question you have to ask is that it probably is bulletproof, but there is the question I think you have to ask is that Swaggy P and JaVale McGee were not superstars.
Okay.
This is a legitimate narrative where Cousins is a superstar coming to join this team of superstars. If it could fracture, then it was the same narrative I like to use in other comparisons, you know, for Lakers.
Okay.
When they brought Malone and Gary Payton in, where it was clear that they were a great team when everyone was healthy, but when Malone started to have his injuries and Payton started to dislike Phil Jackson's offense and issues started to crumble between Shaq and Kobe, I don't think as you know, I'm not a huge chemistry guy, but you also have to consider if you're adding that many all-star talents together, where does it stop?
Yeah.
How many all-stars can you have until you break something?
Right. And that's where we're at right now, is that they've reached the point of ridiculousness on this. And again, people are reacting, I think, emotionally to seeing him go there as opposed to, like I said, the actual impact. I mean, they were going to win the championship, all things being equal anyways. This just makes it a little bit more emphatic in that way. But again, even with that being the case, as we've said, so much to look forward to, more for the medium term and the long term of the league, and to see these trends develop and to see the way that the whole kind of back and forth goes in the Eastern Conference, the jockeying for position towards the top in the now LeBronless East. So I'll be watching that with great fascination, as I know you will be, and talking about this subsequently with you. A true pleasure, as always, Ben Chu. Thank you so much for being on with us, my man.
Oh, I appreciate it, Rick. Have a good rest of your time surviving in Cleveland, Ohio, with that LeBron James.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll do our best here, and visions of Sugar Plums, Colin Sexton, and Billy Preston dancing in our heads this winter. Thank you so much, Ben Chu, and thank you, everybody, for joining us for FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 1008.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.